Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Family Focus Radio. My name is Lynn Burnett. I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. And thank you so much for joining me. I hope it's a sunny day wherever you are. It's a fantastic day here. And it's going to be fantastic for all of us listening to today's show because we're going to be talking with Stephen Gallup. Incredible story. He's the father who raised, advocated for, and helped his son with profound developmental problems. And I had the joy and honor of reading his book called What About the Boy? A Father's Pledge to His Disabled Son. And it's a memoir that tells the story of his family's journey to do what was right for them. And that's the important point, what was right for them. Not necessarily what's right for everybody. And he does emphatically state this in the book. So what was right for them and their son, despite the limitations of the medical establishment, which I think if any of us have had a relationship with that, we can understand that. So we're going to talk with Stephen about his story and discuss the points that any family really should keep in mind to safeguard their health and happiness when they're facing a major challenge. And Stephen had a few of those. Please visit his website at www.fatherspledge.com. You can purchase the book there, and you can purchase the book now through Amazon.com as well. So thank you, Stephen, for joining me today.
Well, hi. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, so welcome. I think this is really important. And just before the show started, we were talking about how, you know, families find themselves in situations where they do face something, not necessarily developmental problems with their children, but it's so important to band together, and that's why I do have this show. Read your book. Thank you so much for sending it. And as I was saying, hard read, but a good read and a worthwhile read and a hopeful read. And I have so many questions. And I did read the book, but I do want to speak as if for those listening who have not read the book. But to start out, Joseph, who's your son that you wrote this memoir about, the developmental problem became because of he was missing brain tissue. Is that right?
Well, that excuse me, that was the initial opinion. Although later on, subsequent brain scans indicated that that was not necessarily the case. However, there was a brain scan early that said that his brain was smaller than usual, and therefore, when things started to turn out not according to the usual plan, that was given as the reason, the explanation for everything that we saw.
So it was so nice at the beginning of the story when you talked about, you know, when Joseph was born and you described your feelings as really any new parent. And he just, very cute, by the way. There's pictures in the book for those of you listening. he, you know, looked well. There was no outward concern when he was born. You picked up your son, you held him, and you and your wife, Judy, were just so happy. How did they come to the conclusion that he was sick, quote-unquote, when he was born?
Well, the folks in the hospital had things that they were looking for that didn't really, that we didn't catch on to. He would lose his food all the time. He would spit up a lot, and I know babies typically do that anyway.
Yeah.
But that was the first warning sign, and they said he had an irritable cry. And based on those two things, they kept him in the hospital for 2 weeks in the newborn ICU. And basically, they just observed him and gave him antibiotics just in case there were some infection, which there wasn't. After we took him home, we could see that he was in some kind of distress. He cried a lot, and he continued to spit up food. And as time passed, nothing was getting better. He wasn't achieving any of the usual developmental milestones. The problems still were not being addressed by his doctors. And in fact, his doctors really didn't have a name for his condition or an explanation for what had caused it. So, since time was passing and the doctors were not attempting to treat him, partway into his second year of life, his mom and I decided that getting help for him was going to be up to us. So we ended up exploring our options with various alternative providers. And I'll say I went to alternative providers very reluctantly. I was sure that the doctors were the ones who had the answers. But Judy, my wife, said, the doctors aren't going to do this. We have to do something else. So I followed her lead, and some of the ones we found did not inspire much confidence, but actually some of them really turned things around for us.
Mm-hmm. So you started with occupational therapy, and that was recommended by the medical establishment, was it not?
Occupational therapy / physical therapy, both.
Yeah. So what just like maybe just a quick, you know, sort of some of the things that you did try and the ones that you did find made a difference. And again, for those listening, you know, certain ones are not may work great for one person, but may not for the other ones. But maybe for some people, parents who are listening that have never heard of something that they, to help them on their journey to find something that may make a difference. What are some of the things that you and your wife checked out?
Okay. We checked out a great many things, so much so that at one point we were told we were just wearing ourselves out, shooting in all directions. But one of the things that Judy tried was a chiropractor, because our son cried so much that she felt that he was in pain. And the chiropractor said, yes, he was in pain. His skull was compressed. Actually, she said the bones of his skull were overlapping due to being compressed at birth. Now, I'm not sure if that's the case. No doctor had ever said that. She did treat him, and he seemed somewhat more comfortable, but we didn't stay with her for a long period of time. We later went to a very special osteopath who treats people via cranial therapy, which is somewhat similar to what chiropractors do, but I don't think that doctor would agree. But she helped us quite a bit, and she did get him to where he no longer spit up. He no longer was crying all the time. He was more tuned in. He was more at peace with himself. So that was, in terms of the physiological problems, I think that that was the thing that helped us. And in terms of, because he was missing developmental milestones as well, we also went to an organization. We live in California. We took him to Philadelphia on the East Coast, to the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential, which is a very alternative, much maligned organization that talks about neurological stimulation. And we were with them for over 4 years. They basically gave us assignments that we implemented at home. It was a very demanding, round-the-clock program that we had to do every day to stimulate him to learn how to crawl and how to walk and how to read and to do a great many things of that nature. But your initial comments about the book, you really do get the book. I'm not writing this book to tell people that they should go to any of these people that we went to. it's not meant as a how-to book, and I can't tell other families specifically what they ought to do to help their kids. First of all, I don't have the credentials for handing out advice like that, and secondly, we should not assume that therapies that helped a child that you don't know, that my child, is going to also help your child.
That's right, yes. And you're very clear about that in the book. This is not a self-help book. This is our experience, and you are not alone, and you can find people that will support you, that will help you, that won't keep things a secret. So you are very clear about that in the book. And speaking of people supporting you, you usually find when something does come up, when you are faced with a challenge, an illness, some kind of situation, that it really does test your relationship with those around you. How was that for you and your wife, with friends and colleagues?
Well, friends and colleagues and relatives were the ones who really noticed it, I think, because anyone who wasn't completely on board with us basically got cut out of our life. And that's something that happens, I think, a lot of times with people when they have a child who's got special issues, that their relatives, they don't know how to act about this, but they treat not knowing about it. Their reaction to it is to try to ignore the problem. So if people call us up and they want to talk about anything else besides our son, we just didn't have the patience to deal with that. Regarding each other, I think we were a pretty good team for a very long time. I was more of a type A person. I was, although Judy led the way into what we were doing, it caught on with me very much, and I really believed in solving this problem we had by any means necessary, and I threw myself into it. And after a while, she was more emotionally connected with our son, and I also should say I had a job too. I was working during the day, so she bore the brunt of doing things, and some of what we had to do on an ongoing basis was just about impossible. So there was tension, there was some friction, but we were, I think, always a pretty good team.
Yeah, incredible what you have to go through, and it's always amazing when you hear stories and people say, wow, I just cannot imagine going through what you go through. But it's amazing, too, when we go through our own challenges or struggles that, I don't know, something amazing happens that you, if you come to that door of a challenge, that you just do what you have to do and there isn't any thought of how am I going to do it. You just do what you need to do. And I think because the love you feel as a parent that is unequal to any other, that is, you know, so true at that time. You just do what you need to do.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think you understand this more than a lot of people do. People who want to tell me that I'm strong or brave or that we were exceptional people, I really don't, that doesn't resonate with me because we just did what we had to do.
Mm-hmm.
We were capable of doing it. Now, you know, I'm older now, and if I had this situation today, I might not be able to do it. I just don't have the same level of energy I used to have. And I did sometimes feel a little bit privately judgmental of people who didn't do this. But I understand at this point that everybody's not in the same space, and I realize that you can't always do it. But fortunately, we were able. We certainly wanted to. There was no debate about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, incredible. And yes, we definitely will do whatever for our children, for sure. Now, you did mention this in the book, and I have seen this, read it, that people who do have children with a disability, no matter what kind of disability it is, you know, parents will say, well, he or she was just a gift from God, and we We just accept them as they are, and that is just the way they are meant to be. But you state in your book that your son Joseph deserved to be more than that, all that he can be, that he deserved to have a normal life. So I would imagine that you do have people maybe that write you or contact you saying, you know, why did you do this? You should have accepted him the way he was. Talk to us about that.
I've run into that a good deal on the internet over the years. I've been talking about this for quite a long time, and there are people who say that. And it has always rubbed me the wrong way. There are a lot of strong opinions out there, and I know some people believe this very strongly, but I don't believe it. I believe that everybody who starts life deserves to go out and do the best he can to lead his own life. And a child does not come here for the purpose of helping or enlightening us. He didn't come for us. He came for himself. I just don't understand how somebody could see it that way. But this is just a basic philosophical belief. I'm not sure how I came to it. And if somebody insists on viewing it differently, then there's not too much we can say to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it's great that you hold that conviction. And it can be a very it is one of those controversial subjects about doing something or not doing something. Why do you think that, for lack of a better term, happened to you and your wife?
Why do I think it happened to us?
Philosophically and medically.
Well, medically, the latest information I have, and it's not that much, my son still really doesn't have a diagnosis, and he's 26 years old now. But I think his problem is due to some genetic error that occurred at some time before he was born. But we don't know precisely what. I don't know what genes are involved or how they affect him. I wish I did, because if we knew that, it might be possible to help him further. We have helped him a lot with what we did, but it had definite limitations. And knowing precisely what you're dealing with, I think, is the best possible way of treating it. Seems like common sense.
Yeah.
But that's all I can tell you in terms of medically. In terms of philosophically, you know, there's got to be a reason for everything. I just don't believe in chance. It's just not part of my set. I think everything does have a cause. But, you know, I can't really say anything coherent about that. I wish I could. Maybe I just haven't, in spite of all the thinking I've done about this, I haven't come up with something.
Yeah, quite the journey for sure. There's so many questions I have. Now, unfortunately, Judy did pass away some time back.
Yes, she developed cancer, okay, and she died in 1994. Joseph was 9 years old then.
Mm-hmm. So how's that been different for you with your son after she passed?
I attempted to carry on as before with him. We had, at that point, stopped a formal program with him. Her illness, she was ill for 2 years, and it pretty much took over things at our home. After she left, well, the first thing was just to make sure he understood things. And I think he didn't grasp right away that she had died. I think I mentioned this in the book. She died at around Thanksgiving time in November. And I took him back to the East Coast to visit family in Christmas. And on the flight home, I noticed he was quite perky and more cheerful than usual. And then we got home to a dark house, and he seemed crestfallen. And I didn't catch on right away, but I realized later he had, I think, expected her to be waiting for us. And a few nights after that, I was with my sister and her husband at a restaurant, and I suppose something that was said over the table made it click for him, and he realized that she was gone forever. because he started screaming and crying at the table. And so he had a delayed, perhaps any child would, realization of what really had happened. But subsequent to that, I reacted to that by taking him to Disneyland. And he had a great time, and we've moved ahead with his life and our life together. And I have still pursued new treatments when they've come along, although not so much in the last few years. Most of what I've pursued in the recent past has not been very helpful. I found a number of people out there who are preying on people's desperation, and it basically all they're doing is adding to their bank account. And this needs to be said, because when you're dealing with this sort of thing, you've got to not let your heart run away with your mind. You need to evaluate these things and know, why would I do this, and what am I hoping to accomplish with it, and what justification is there in thinking that this might work? Just because someone says, "I can help you," oh, that's music to your ears, but can he help you? You know, so. Joseph,
yeah, that's a good point. Good point. There is a lot of snake oil salesmen out there that do prey on that desperation that people feel. That is so unfortunate. I can't imagine what lives inside those kinds of human beings that they could do that. Obviously, they've never gone through anything themselves, because I think, I remember when my dad had cancer and... he had to follow his own path as well. He decided not to choose the traditional chemotherapy radiation route and chose his own path. And, you have to be careful, because there are a lot of snake oil salesmen out there that are just waiting. It is so sad. So sad.
Yeah, they come into the discussion groups that people have on the internet, and they like I mentioned a while ago, they mention an anecdote that this other child was improved, and therefore the assumption is your child will be improved. Well, you don't know anything about what was done with that child or what that child's specific problem was, so there's no way of making the connection. But I interface with a lot of younger families, and I see this. They want to be told what they can do, and they don't really want to hear that it's not going to work. And I hate to be a wet blanket, and I don't want to crush people's hope, because I know what it's like. People try to tell us not to do things as well.
Yeah. So let me ask you, because this I find quite interesting, and when you and your wife decided to start, not accepting what the medical establishment said to you and offered, which was not much, and you started pursuing, researching some alternative therapies, what was the result of your relationship with the medical establishment, or if you had continued one at all?
It was a very skimpy relationship in terms of things like physical therapy, which the doctors had recommended. Number one, that was going to be turned off anyway at his second birthday, because he didn't have what they call a qualifying diagnosis. But they told us if we went on to doing what we were talking about doing, they would cut us off anyway, because I guess it's good medical practice. You shouldn't treat the same problem with two things at the same time. But anyway, every time we went to see a doctor and the doctor told us that we were doing the wrong thing, it was discouraging.
Yeah.
And so I suppose there was a tendency to see less of them.
For sure,
So we had bad days when we saw doctors. And,
I think everybody does.
But, well, before we went the alternative route, they were bad days too, because in those days we went in there with great hopes that we were going to get some help each time. This time they're going to find something. This time they're going to tell us. And it felt like a revolving door. We came back outside on the pavement, and what was accomplished? Nothing. What did we do? Well, we got an appointment slip to come again. That's all. But later, when we were doing something else and we saw a doctor, the doctor said that what we were doing was wrong, not that he had anything better to suggest, but even so, we were wrong. Well, we just decided that we didn't need to hear that. And, you know, that's not necessarily a good response, because we needed to be in touch with these people. Mm-hmm. And we paid a price for that. You know, this book is intended for the general public, but I hope that that medical people will read it as well, because this is a feedback in terms of the patient-doctor interface and what happens when that goes wrong. And I would like for it to be the start of some dialogue about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that is absolutely what's needed. And unfortunately, you know, the medical establishment, Western medicine, absolutely has its place, but there's also huge drawbacks to it, because in your case and many others that I've seen, they don't know it all. They really are at a loss, and definitely saw that with your son, that, you know, they offered maybe what they thought they could, but they didn't know any more than you did.
Well, Lynn, there's an excellent book out by a physician named Atul Gawande who writes about this. I actually mentioned his book in the epilogue of What About the Boy?
Yes.
He says that probably the hardest thing about practicing medicine is being able to know in advance what you can change and what you can't. Mm-hmm. If something is not possible, then, and if you can't help a patient, well, then I guess there's no point in trying. But on the other hand, what if it is possible to help? And when the patient is a tiny kid with his whole life in front of him, the inducement to try should be pretty strong. The difference between being unable to do anything and being able, I'm talking about the child, if the child is able to do something, I mean, that's tremendous. And I think that difference justifies making an effort, even if you aren't sure. It justifies taking chances. And in his book, Dr. Gawande says that he believes it's better for doctors to err on the side of trying too hard rather than not hard enough. But Dr. Gawande was not my son's doctor. My son had doctors who ran some tests, got results that were either negative or inconclusive, and could not arrive at a diagnosis and gave up.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. They did. There didn't seem to be much effort at all or motivation to step up maybe to the challenge, is what you hope from Western medicine, that, and then why they get into the profession is, when there is a challenge that presents itself, why is this happening? Let's find out. Let's work with people who, you know, parents that are going through things like this. And that's where it's such a disadvantage and frustrating, I think, that why is there a hesitation between Western medicine, Eastern medicine, to get together and work together for all possibilities. You know, the Eastern medicine is just so wanting to collaborate, but it's the establishment that doesn't want to. And you think, gee, wouldn't you want to do what you could, be a part of whatever you could to make a difference in the lives of people?
There are structural reasons, I think, and I probably should not comment on them, but there are reasons why medicine is oriented the way it is. And but, you know, the fact is, we grow up in this culture, and perhaps we expect too much of them. But, you know, I don't blame anybody for what he doesn't know. Whether maybe they are cutting out a large part of what they might be learning from, but. And I realize that a patient like my son presents a challenge, a bigger challenge than someone with a sore throat or whatever. But if you're going to call yourself a doctor, I think you owe it to your patients to really try to help them. And whatever means they use to try, then I think that's what we're asking for.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think your book does that. It's a phenomenal book, a great read, and I think it really can help other parents who are going through a challenge, big or small, that they will feel that they're not alone. And I think for that, it's worth its weight in gold. And I thank you for writing it. I thank you for joining me today, taking the time out to share with me and others. You're a great inspiration, Steve.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your comments. I think you really do get the book.
I do. I do, for sure. For those of you listening, make sure you check out www.fatherspledge.com. The book is available now. Get it. It's a great read. I love the cover picture. So nice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it does convey the, or it tries to convey the idea of being in a maze, trying to make the right decisions to get out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And please check out Steve's website. I wish you and Joseph every joy that's available.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And thank you for having me on, too.
Thank you.
Right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks,
bye
everybody,
now.
For joining us. I hope you have a fantastic day. Please read the book. Even if you don't have a child with developmental disabilities, read the book. It's well worth it. And thank you again, Steve, for joining me, and thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you here next week. Have a fantastic week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Bye now.